Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Black Friday, wow, shop Wayfair now. Month-long big deals, yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong, check out the song. Festive decor, Black Friday score.
Garlands and trees,
saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Hands of the clock, area roads. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the season.
Okay, so let's dive into these documents. We've got quite a collection here. There's this Inspector Story Production Guide, a set of principles of unseen horror, and then this historical account, The Man Who Watched Himself Die.
Right. It's a fascinating mix. You've got the how-to for creating a specific kind of horror, the philosophy behind it, and then a real-world case that, well, it seems to echo those ideas in unsettling ways.
Exactly. So our goal today is to unpack all that. What are these principles they're talking about? How does this unseen horror actually work?
And then look at that historical case, the Moore murders, but specifically through the lens of how this source presents it. How do those details fit, or maybe not fit, these horror principles?
It's about understanding the mechanism, really.
Yeah.
And this method, it feels very deliberate. It's not just cheap thrill.
No, not at all. There's a clear philosophy, almost a doctrine, laid out here for building a particular kind of dread.
Let's start with that Inspector Story Production Guide. The core aim, they state. It's pretty specific. To make the show feel like a cursed audiophile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like your typical true crime show at all. They explicitly mention blending paranormal realism, government secrecy, and lost footage. It's aiming for this sort of found artifact feel.
That framing cursed file, lost footage, that immediately puts you on edge, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It suggests danger, something forbidden. You're listening to something you maybe shouldn't be. It sets the mood before the actual story even begins. It's a psychological primer, almost.
And the rules inside this guide, they're surprisingly strict, like the tone rules. Hosts have to disagree, present separate angles, or go devil's advocate.
Uh-huh. And no parroting. That's interesting.
Right. And avoid typical podcast banter. Just jump straight into the file.
So that disagreement rule, it's not just for show, is it? What's the intended effect there?
Well, I think it forces you, the listener, to engage more actively. If there's no single easy answer presented, you have to weigh the different views yourself.
It mirrors the uncertainty of the unexplained, maybe? Keeps you from getting comfortable with one interpretation?
Yeah, and cutting the banter, it makes it feel more immediate, more stark. Like, here's the data, deal with it. No warm-up.
Clinical, almost.
And it mentions needing a cold open for segments. Stories have to slowly escalate. Never put the big stuff up front.
Makes sense for building tension. And what about language?
They say use emotionally loaded language with restraint. Things like insane or terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they want those used sparingly.
That restraint is key, I think. It adds weight. If everything's cranked up to 11, nothing feels truly significant. But if you hold back, then when you do use that stronger language, maybe pulled from their examples of haunting language, it hits harder.
Right. Like it signals something genuinely out of the ordinary, even within this strange context.
So how do they actually tell the stories, the style itself?
It's all about treating cases like leaked documents or recovered files. That means using specific kinds of words.
Okay.
They list forensic terms, recorded, flagged, surveillance, incident, archive, sealed. Very procedural.
Right, grounding it in a kind of official reality.
But then they deliberately mix that with what they call haunting language. The examples are, well, they're effective. The tape never blinked.
Oh, wow.
He was standing in the static.
Okay, that's, yeah. Using a technical term like static and making it a place where something can be, that blurs lines. It's familiar language made deeply unfamiliar. Very unsettling.
Definitely disorienting. And the guide stresses setting, silence, and contradiction.
Contradiction? Like what?
They give an example. The door was locked, but she was already inside. That kind of impossible scenario.
Ah, okay. That taps right into cognitive dissonance. Our brains hate paradoxes. A locked door means security, but the threat is already in. It forces you to confront something illogical, which is inherently disturbing.
And silence, too. They say, let imagery carry tension, not exposition. Silence isn't empty.
No, in this context, it's loaded. It's the space where the unseen operates. It implies listening, waiting, a presence. It becomes part of the narrative fabric itself.
And the endings. Yep. They're very clear. End each story with a disturbing line or question, no hard conclusions.
Always leave them hanging.
Yeah, the examples are things like, the next photo on the roll wasn't of the tunnel, it was of them sleeping.
Chilling.
Or, it wasn't a room, it was a trap, and someone keeps resetting it.
That lack of closure is crucial. It denies you that sense of safety, that the story is contained and finished. The unease lingers precisely because it's unresolved. It sticks with you.
So that's the how-to from the production guide. Let's shift to the principles of unseen horror. This feels more like the why.
The philosophy underpinning it all.
And the very first principle seems key. Horror is never explained, only hinted.
That's the bedrock, isn't it?
Yeah.
The unknown is almost always more terrifying than the known. Once you name the monster, you can, in theory, fight it. But if it's just a hint, a suggestion, it's boundless. Your own mind fills in the gaps with its worst fears.
The world described in these principles, it's one where silence is suspicious, shadows mean something, and nothing is viral.
Interesting. Nothing is viral, meaning this stuff stays hidden, doesn't spread easily.
Seems like it. And explicitly, no jump scares or exposition dumps. It's all about fragments, hints, broken pieces of information. The idea is every detail must feel like part of a bigger unseen mechanism.
That bigger unseen mechanism idea, that's powerful. It implies that scary things aren't just random. They're symptoms of something larger, maybe a system, maybe an intelligence that's hidden.
It taps into those fears of being watched or controlled or part of some experiment you don't understand.
Yeah, cosmic horror, but brought down to a very personal, insidious level. Like finding a strange pattern in your junk mail that suddenly feels meaningful.
And the audio and atmosphere notes really back this up. They want audio cues to be minimal and unsettling.
What kind of cues?
Things like long silences, reverse sounds, off-frequency distortion, low hums, even slow tape drag, no big dramatic music.
So sounds that feel inherently wrong or broken.
Exactly. And sounds are treated as story clues. Things like mechanical whirring, distant breathing, countdowns, overlapping whispers. And they repeat that point about silence. Dead air is not a gap, it's tension.
Those subtle audio cues bypass your rational mind, I think. They hit something more primal. Reversed sounds just feel unnatural. Distortion suggests damage. Long silences make you strain to hear, putting you on high alert. The sounds become evidence of that unseen mechanism.
Then there's the section on dialogue realism, which is fascinating. Characters must not behave like horror movie victims.
How should they behave?
Rational, but confused. And memory gets manipulated. People might forget things too quickly or remember too clearly.
So subtly off.
Yeah. And the observation that no one reacts appropriately, even the evidence itself, like transcripts, might be unreliable, full of redactions, mismatched timestamps, odd gaps.
That feels very psychologically astute, making characters relatable in their confusion, but wrong in their reactions or recall. It mirrors that feeling of encountering something truly bizarre yourself. You try to rationalize, but things don't quite add up.
It destabilizes your trust in the narrative itself.
And the unreliable transcripts just amplify that. You can't even trust the official record within the story.
They list some specific psychological horror devices, too. Memory loops.
Trapped in a moment.
Parasitic footage. The example is, the more they watched, the harder it was to stop.
Ooh, like the information itself is dangerous, addictive.
Also pattern logic and bureaucratic horror.
Bureaucratic horror, like Kafka meets the supernatural, the dread of impersonal systems, but applied to something otherworldly. That's chilling.
It all feeds into the lore and thematic texture section.
Mm-hmm.
The core idea. Everything is part of something larger, a system, a cover-up, a pattern, a test.
Always pointing towards that bigger picture.
And this line, ambient entities don't appear, they corrupt.
Corrupt? How? Like the place, the data, people's minds.
Seems like all of the above. The focus shifts from what happened to why it was documented. It's about a brush with a bigger thing that refuses to be seen.
So the horror isn't necessarily a monster jumping out. It's the influence, the subtle alteration of reality, the feeling that you're caught in the gears of something vast and indifferent, maybe even malevolent. The documentation itself might be part of the mechanism.
Okay, so with that whole framework in mind, the production rules. The philosophy, well, let's look at the historical case they included. The man who watched himself die. About the Moore family murders. We need to be clear, we're only talking about the details presented in this source document.
Got it. What does the source say happened?
It lays out the basics. June 10th, 1912, Villisca, Iowa. Josiah and Sarah Moore, their four kids. Herman, Catherine, Boyd, Paul, and two visiting girls. Lena and Ina Skellinger. The source says the killer slaughtered everyone inside with an axe, found bludgeoned to death in their beds. Horrific.
Truly awful. But how does the source describe what happened next? That seems key to connecting it to these principles.
Right. The source highlights that the killer stayed in the house afterwards. For quite a while, apparently.
Stayed doing what?
According to the source, things like covering mirrors, draping sheets over the bodies, and even cooking a meal.
Wait, cooking a meal? After that kind of brutality? That's deeply bizarre.
Exactly. It's contradictory. Extreme violence than these strange, almost ritualistic or domestic acts. And then, the source says, the killer vanished without a trace.
Vanished. And the final detail from the source?
No one was ever charged.
Okay. That fits perfectly with the never explained principle, doesn't it? The contradictions in the killer's actions, the violence, the covering mirrors, the meal, the disappearance resist easy explanation. And the lack of resolution leaves this huge, disturbing question mark.
And the source description of the aftermath also aligns eerily well with the unseen horror principles.
How so?
It says rumors of hauntings grew over the years. It lists phenomena like footsteps on the stairs, whispers from empty rooms, shadows moving across walls. Specifically mentions children's voices echo.
Sounds becoming story clues again. Ambient phenomena.
Yes. So source calls the house one of the most active sites and claims visitors leave pale, shaken.
So, connecting back to the principles, it's like the ambient entity idea. The horror isn't just the historical crime. It's this lingering corruption of the place, as described by the source. The house itself becomes the source of unease, affecting people who encounter it. The whispers, the shadows, they corrupt the atmosphere.
The silence becomes suspicious. The shadows mean something. It maps directly.
And the final line of that excerpt in the source, how does it end?
It ends. Something is still inside that house, and it's not resting.
Wow. That could literally be one of those required disturbing line or question endings from the Inspector's Story Guide.
It really could. It encapsulates the whole philosophy. The horror is ongoing, unseen, unresolved, and actively present. Not just a memory, but a force.
It suggests whatever it is, it's part of that larger unseen thing the principles hint at.
So looking at all this, this deep dive shows a really calculated approach to horror. It's not about startling you. It's about unsettling you on a deeper level.
Yeah, using atmosphere, psychology, contradiction, the power of suggestion, and the fear of the unknown or the incomprehensible system. It focuses on the residue of trauma, the unexplained patterns.
It's about making you feel like you've stumbled onto something you weren't supposed to see and maybe can't unsee.
So if we take these ideas seriously for a moment, that horror can lie in the hinted at, the contradictory, the systemic, the documentation itself.
Mm-hmm.
What does that imply when you encounter things in real life that feel off? A place, a story, a strange coincidence that seems to follow these rules.
That's a disquieting thought. And consider this final idea from the sources. If ambient entities don't appear, they corrupt, and everything is part of something larger. What small, seemingly insignificant details might you already be overlooking? Details that could be part of a pattern you just haven't recognized yet.
¿Buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's? ¡Estás justo a tiempo! Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.